The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Lee Kwai.
And I'm another. I'm DJ.
So, DJ, we are winding down Forgotten Realms, but before we get out of here, we got to talk about the new cards, the new non-legendary creature cards from the Forgotten Realms Commander product.
I like this a lot because you always get a pre-con. You know, I love playing it together, but then after I play it, I love like picking it apart. You know what I mean? You get all those little treats for your other commander decks, and I think it's so fun to look at these new cards because they have more freedom to be more unique, you know?
Yeah, they really do design the commander decks, you know, for the deck itself to be cohesive, but they also do sort of cherry pick some designs they want to put into commander, mm-hmm. but they don't want it to go through standard or whatever, so they can kind of put a couple of hidden gems in there that I think you're meant to pull out. I often order like a lot of singles from the commander products to go in my decks. And speaking of singles, if you want to order some singles, cardkingdom.com/command zone, that's the place to go. That's our affiliate link. You know you're gonna buy Magic cards anyway. You may as well just use the affiliate link when you do, because you're simultaneously helping out all of our content when you do that. And also, Card Kingdom is just the best. They get you the stuff the fastest, in the best condition. If there's any problems, they are the best at resolving your problems. They go above and beyond, and that's one thing I really love in a company. So Card Kingdom, definitely a great company that we can really stand behind, and we have for years and years. And once you get the cards that you've ordered, you want to protect them, right? You don't want them to get dinged up or banged up. And you can see all of our cards here on the table are in Eclipse sleeves, Pro Gloss, mm-hmm. Eclipse sleeves. That's by Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro is the company we trust our own collections to make sure that our cards stay safe. They make the playmats, the deck boxes, the sleeves. They have awesome dice. They have everything you need to adorn your battlefield. And then, of course, the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. Patrons get all kinds of cool perks. Get to watch, let's see, Game Nights earlier than anybody else. If you haven't seen the latest episode of Game Nights, came out, I think, about a week or two ago when you're watching this. A really exciting game. Had some cool D&D flair.
Yeah, we got an episode of Extra Turns coming up.
Yep.
You know, so.
Might have come out already. We're shooting this a little bit ahead of time, so I'm not sure of the schedule. We got another episode of Game Nights on the horizon. Playing the AFC Commander decks, actually. We have some cool guests for that one. I won't tease. I won't spoil who that is quite yet. Anyway, patrons also get one other perk. Actually, they get a lot more than one other perk.
I know,
but right? There is one cool perk that we're gonna do right now, which is we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to William Gerwig. William, you rock.
Thanks, William.
All right, let's get into our main topic here. AFC, which is the Forgotten Realms Commander product, the In the 99 set review.
So one thing I think that a lot of us noticed about these pre-constructed decks is that they are very focused. We have like a dungeon deck on the newest dungeon mechanic.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And before this release, no one had a dungeon deck. You
right.
know what I mean?
That wasn't a thing.
That wasn't a thing. So it's really interesting to have these pre-constructed decks that are so narrow. I mean, same thing with dice rolling, right?
Yeah.
You know, you might've had an Enrage deck, but you didn't have a dice rolling deck. And so we noticed that these pre-cons are pretty narrow, going towards pretty new archetypes.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit last year of Ikoria.
Yeah.
There was the Mutate deck, and then there was the keyword counter deck, and those
right.
really had a little bit of overlap, but not a ton, because I think that's one of the things that releasing the Commander product around a specific set allows them to do, which is make it so that you could at least build a Dungeons Matter deck. It might not have as much support because you don't have 25 years of Magic behind it, but at least they can sort of bolster it a little bit with Commander product and main set.
Totally. I'm glad that they do it, and I really like new decks that I've never seen before. It does mean that there are fewer cards that go in the 99, because like your Dungeon Matters card doesn't easily slot into my existing deck.
Yeah, so all of this is by way of which to say, we're not going to go super deep on the really narrow cards. We say this in a lot of set reviews, which is like, hey, you don't need us to tell you that you should put zombies into your zombie deck. And this is kind of the same thing. You don't really need us to tell you, like, hey, if you're building a Dungeons Matter deck, use the Dungeons Matter cards in the Commander product, right?
Yeah.
If you're building a dice rolling deck, well, it really has only been this a couple of sets where you can even pull from. So yes, use the cards that have dice rolling on them. We're going to go through just a couple highlights because it's fun, but we're not going to dwell on that. Otherwise, this would be a 4-hour long episode. So having said all that, let's start with the dungeon cards.
That's right. So let's start with what I think is one of the best dungeon cards. And so if you are building a Dungeon Matters deck, I think that you need to include Radiant Solar. Radiant Solar is 5 and a white for a 3/6 angel with flying and lifelink. Whenever Radiant Solar or another non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, venture into the dungeon. You can also pay a white and discard Radiant Solar, venture into the dungeon, and you gain 3 life.
Okay, so a lot of interesting stuff. And we've seen some of this stuff on other cards.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that we see, though, has ways to venture into the dungeon once a turn.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've held us back a little bit. You know, even the face commander says, you know, venture in once per turn. Do this effect once per turn. But Radiant Solar is just like, no, non-token creature enters the battlefield, venture. And so you can cast these creatures and keep venturing. And I think that you gain a lot of advantage in these venture decks when you can venture a couple, 3 or 4 times in a single turn and kind of explosively venture through the dungeon. And I think that this is a card that facilitates that.
Yeah, you don't even have to cast, actually, either. It's just enter the battlefield, which I like. I think, like, Varus is another similar card, but says only do it once per turn, and it's on cast of the creature. This is ETB, so you can flicker, you can reanimate, you can do some tricky shenanigans. And if you can get into a situation like a Gravecaller or something, shenanigans where something's entering, leaving an arbitrary amount of times, then you can venture that many times. And we've kind of established if you venture,
you can win the game,
if you venture enough, you can win the game based on just creating the treasure, drawing the cards and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I think that this is sort of a highlight of the dungeon deck. If you're interested in dungeons, obviously look at anything that says venture on it, but I think you definitely have to pay attention to this card.
All right. The next dungeon card that might matter is Thorough Investigation, 2 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever you attack, investigate, which means you create a clue token and you can pay 2 and sacrifice the clue to draw a card. That's what clues are. And it says, whenever you sacrifice a clue, venture into the dungeon. So I like this card because just whenever you attack, investigate is like borderline playable.
Yeah,
especially in mono white.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, even in Boros or even in some other colors, if you're going to be attacking a lot, just getting an extra card draw outlet, it's kind of like every time you attack, you may pay 2, draw a card. But it's even better than that because you can pay the 2 at any time. So you don't like have to wait and see, do I need my removal spell? No, I don't. Now I can crash it in. So it's a little better than that. And then it gives additional value because when you crack the clues, you venture into the dungeon.
Yeah, I like this card. I think it's very strong in those dungeon decks like we talked about. And I do think it's on the edge of being good in just a mono white deck to get that card advantage. Because I also like that you like investigating. You'll take the clue, you'll take the card, but then you also get, it's a little bit more than a card. You know what I mean? Because you also get to venture through that dungeon. So you get the card in the scry. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, exactly. Card in a treasure, card in a 1/1, card in a 1/1 counter, card in a draw. Yeah. Like that, you know, once you do that 3 or 4 times, you've actually gotten like 1.33 or 1.5 cards per time you attacked. Yeah, so I actually think Thorough Investigation is one of the few dungeon/dice enablers that might make it out into the wild in a deck that doesn't have any other venturing in the dungeon in it.
Yeah, I am a little bit annoyed that it's on attack in white. Like, yes. I want other ways of gaining card advantage besides attacking, but you know what? I'm not going to argue too much.
I wish it was like per player too. So allow me to get 3 clues if I attack 3 different players. Like, because clues are not broken. You still pay 2 mana, right, to draw the card. So,
yeah. Okay. And the last card that we think is a particular call out in the dungeon category is Midnight Pathfinder. Sorry. And the last card that we have in the dungeon category is Midnight Pathlighter. 2 white, blue.
You don't want to try it again?
I'm afraid that they're just going to leave this whole thing in now.
They are. They are. Just continue. Midnight Pathlighter.
There we go. 2 white, blue for a 2/3 human wizard. Creatures you control can't be blocked except by legendary creatures. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, venture into the dungeon.
So it's interesting because this gives evasion and it gives value on dealing combat damage to a player. This does say a player, so if you hit three players, you'll venture three times.
That's pretty good. We talk about how being able to explosively move through the dungeon is really good. I just am a little bit... How many legendary creatures are out there? How free is this for attacking? You know what I mean? It's not shadow. It's not horsemanship. Is it better than flying?
It's really hard to tell. So like, hard. I'm trying to think. I mean, I think there are a lot of legendary creatures out there, but people don't block that much in general with their legendary creatures. Usually it's their commander. Yeah,
right. It's their commander.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, it's definitely not as good as horsemanship as, you know, I think that's true because nothing has horsemanship. Is it roughly equivalent to flying? It's probably not quite as good as flying, right?
Again, I don't know. And I think that...
So it's at least close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough.
That's worth something. Yeah, four mana, make your stuff like if it was four mana, give all your stuff flying.
Like Archetype of Imagination, yeah, people play that.
Well, that takes away flying.
I know, that's totally unblockable. You're right.
But I mean, if it was four mana, give all your stuff flying. That's like playable, right?
Yeah, that's playable for sure.
So the fact that it also gives value on... is it on attack?
Combat damage. Combat damage.
So I wanted to compare this to something like Binding of Thassa. So Binding of Thassa is 2 blue-blue for a legendary artifact. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. So it's the same cost, basically. And then it also has an activated ability. You can pay 1 and blue, and creatures your opponents control attack this turn if able. So you can force them to attack, which shields down, and then you can attack them. Almost never does anybody use Binding of Thassa's ability. I've very rarely seen it. Once in a while, they'll do it to kill something, but it's rare. So this doesn't give this the evasion, but it every time you hit with a creature, you draw a card. Drawing a card is a lot better than venturing into the dungeon.
Yeah.
So on... You've got Binding of Thassa in your left hand and Midnight Pathlighter in your right hand. Are they even comparable, or is it just Binding of Thassa every time?
Slam dunk Binding of Thassa, and then I'll also play Coastal Piracy and Reconnaissance and these other ones too. So,
but none of those give the evasion.
You're right. They don't.
So the fact that this fills two roles, or is just venture into the dungeon just so much worse than draw a card that you just don't even put them in the same category? Is Midnight Pathlighter more of a give my team evasion card than it is a create value from attacking card?
Do you know what? Now that we're talking about it in these terms, I think it has to be.
Yeah.
You know? Because if it's just the trigger, the combat damage trigger, I don't think it's good enough. There's so many other things that overshadow it, so it has to be that evasion.
So then I kind of like it in decks that want to give all their team evasion, in which case it does give you a little extra in addition to that evasion. So maybe it's more playable than I thought, honestly.
I can see that now, like a Geist of St. Traft, like low to the ground, blue white, tempo creatures, a tacky deck.
Yeah. It seems like it's going to basically do the job of a Sun Quan. I mean, not at quite as good, but it's one less or two less mana and... a lot less expensive. Sun Quan is a lot of money.
Do you know what? I think that you've convinced me to like it a lot more than I did when I started this. I think that's good.
I convinced myself as well, because I thought going into the discussion, I would like Binding of Thassa a lot more. But I think they're just different. They're not the same. You can't think of them as the same card. Okay. The next arc, that's all the dungeon cards we're going to talk about. There were many, many more in this set. And like we said, hey, if you're building a dungeons deck, you probably want those cards, but we're not going to dwell on them. The next archetype is Rolling Dice. So this is another new thing that they've brought along in Forgotten Realms. So we're going to talk about a few cards here that we think may have some usability outside of just rolling dice decks. This first one is Component Pouch. 3 mana for an artifact. You can tap it and remove a component counter from the component pouch, and then add 2 mana of different colors. So it doesn't start with any counters, but it also has a second ability, which is you tap it and roll a d20. And if you roll a 1 through 9, you put 1 counter on the thing. And if you roll a 10 through 20, you put 2 counters on it. So if you roll a 10 or above, which you're on average, you should roll, you're slightly favored. It's like 60% or something to get 2 counters. And then you can spend the next 2 turns tapping it to get 2 mana each time if you do that. You know, obviously good in a dice rolling deck because so many cards say when you roll a dice, do this other thing or roll 2. So you just want to be rolling dice.
Yeah, I think this is top tier in dice rolling decks, kind of like we were talking about Radiant Solar being top tier. I think it's good because you get to roll for free and it's always good. Like you're always putting something on it. You're always sort of ramping your mana or whatever like that.
Yeah.
And it's something that you could do every turn. I mean, I've seen some dice rolling decks.
You'd probably play a card that was just like a couple of mana, roll a dice, don't do anything. You know, doesn't have a payoff for the rolling of the dice. Just says roll a dice, have fun.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what this kind of can be.
You had an interesting comparison though, thinking about component couch. I always wanted it to be a couch. You know why? Because couch is very comfortable and I wish I was on the couch right now. Component pouch. You had an interesting comparison to a card that sees a decent amount of play.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like Coalition Relic. Mm-hmm. Coalition Relic is 3 mana for an artifact. You can tap to add 1 mana of any color, or you can tap to put a charge counter on Coalition Relic, and at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, remove all charge counters from Coalition Relic, add 1 mana of any color for each charge counter removed this way. So the play pattern is play it on 3, charge it, and then on your next turn, be able to have two mana out of it.
Yeah, so on your turn 4, you have 6 mana.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that play pattern can be mimicked by this pouch.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and there are oftentimes when I see people playing with Coalition Relic, and myself included, I hardly ever tap it for mana. I always try to like have that thing be untapped and then charge it before my turn and then try to have it up. And
is that true though? Because I feel like I use my Coalition Relic for regular mana quite often. And I, you know, obviously you pick your spots for the other thing, but I feel like I still tap it for 1 mana quite often. I mean, you have to have exactly need the 2 mana or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's like, the other thing I will say is Coalition Relic can be tapped for mana the turn you play it.
It's true.
So a lot of times you're like turn 6 or something, you draw it, you play it, you tap it along with your other 3 mana, and now you cast a 4-drop and a 3-drop in the same turn, which Component Pouch cannot do.
You are absolutely right. Coalition Relic is, I believe, definitively better.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that this is a good card. Coalition Relic is a good card.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the play pattern can be compared means that this is an amazing dice rolling card.
Sure. But yeah, I wouldn't put Component Pouch in any deck that doesn't have dice rolling. Even if you're not playing Coalition Relic, I still wouldn't play it. I would just play a 2-mana rock.
Also, Coalition Relic after reprints is like $1.
Yeah.
So because it used to be like a $15 card, and then I would be like, oh, I got it. Dude, budget Coalition Relic, go for it. Maybe you'll be fine. But now that Coalition Relic is like $1.50 or something like that, it's like, why bother rolling dice?
And Coalition Relic isn't even like a staple anymore. It's fringe playable. Cutting most of my 3-mana rocks now. So yeah, I don't like Component Pouch much. All right, let's talk about the next dice rolling card, which is Chaos Dragon. 1 red for a 4/4 dragon with flying and haste. Holy crap, 3-mana 4/4 flying haste. Chaos Dragon attacks each combat if able. That's not that bad. That's just forcing you to play correctly. But it says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, each player rolls a d20. Each player. If one or more opponents had the highest result, Chaos Dragon can't attack those players or planeswalkers they control this combat. So basically, before combat, you and everybody else roll a dice. You want to roll the highest because that means you can attack anybody who you want. If you didn't roll the highest, whoever did, you cannot attack with the dragon this turn. Boy, how big of a downside is that?
You can attack the other two.
Right.
Yeah.
If two people tie for the highest, though, you can't attack either of them. You have to attack the third person. If all three tie for the highest, then you should go to Vegas because that seems like it's very unlikely to happen.
I just think that there are very few decks in Commander that want this much damage, like just to do this kind of aggressive damage. It's 4/4 flyer. But there are decks out there that do.
4/4 flying haste.
It is very pushed when it comes to just dealing damage. And so if you are a deck that wants to deal damage, like a red deck or gruel deck that just wants things on the battlefield to just punch in and deal damage, I think it's great. And sometimes those types of decks, yes, they would have a preferred person, but most of the time you're going to be able to attack who you want to.
I found the haste to be quite important in like equipment decks or a dex, because often they'll just remove your creature and you're sitting there like, I need another creature, but then I can put all this stuff on it. So even turn 9 or something, you're like, whatever, play this thing, it has haste, put all the stuff on it, swing. This is a little bit scary because it might not be able to swing at who you want. I don't know how big of a downside that is. Does it get worse as there's less players? Because once you're down to 1v1, you only have a 50-50 chance of being able to hit your opponent with it, right?
Yeah.
Or that's probably bad. Slightly under 50% because you can tie. So on ties, you don't get to attack them.
Yeah.
I would rather just play a card that I know is going to do what I want to rather than have like this iffy, I got to roll dice, even though that I know the dice rolling can be fun.
Yeah. I think that this might be aggressive enough and pushed enough that I would be okay playing with it, because once you get down to 1v1 in Commander, almost any 3-drop you draw might just not be what you need to close
That's
out the game.
That's
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that this card fulfills the role of being able to pressure life totals quickly.
It's going to hit for a lot. Whoever loses the dice roll early is going to be like, ugh. All right. We got one more dice rolling card we're going to talk about here. It is another card that harkens to other cards in the past.
Yeah, it's Diviner's Portent. X, blue, blue, blue. For an instant, roll a d20 and add the number of cards in your hand. A 1 through 14, you just draw X cards. A 15 plus, scry X, then draw X cards.
So if you have, you know, five cards in your hand, then you only have to roll a 10 or above to scry, then draw X cards. The X is always determined by the amount of mana you spent. Mm-hmm. It's just whether you get to scry or not before you draw. How important is the scry when you're drawing so much? Because in my experience, the stroke of genius type Blue Sun Zenith cards, you don't usually see them cast for a draw three. They're usually like 10 or more.
Exactly.
In those cases, it doesn't feel like scry.
It's not going to do very much because you're drawing so much, whether you're going to hit the things that you want to anyways, and there's going to be cards stranded in your hand anyways that you would have scryed to the bottom.
Right.
And so you're just brute force. Like
I guess scry 10, draw 10 is still good, though. Like, you're going to get rid of like five or six cards, and then, you know, you'll get a better hand than you would have by not looking. So I guess that's still an upside.
Maybe if you're searching for something specific.
Yeah, like,
you
know, I need a board wipe.
I need a board wipe. I need a combo piece or something like that. I think that could be really good. But I don't think that this is inherently better than, say, Commander's Insight, X, blue, 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 instant, you draw X cards, and then you draw an additional card for each time you've cast your commander from the command zone this game. Or Blue Sun Zenith, X, blue, 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 target player draws X cards, you shuffle Blue Sun Zenith into its owner's library.
Well, I will say, go back to Commander's Insight. It's actually not you draw, it's target player draws. And that's a huge difference because Blue Sun Zenith and Commander's Insight both say target player and actually like are often used to KO players because you get enough mana and you go, ah, I'm going to Blue Sun Zenith you for 900. And they're like, I can't draw 900. And you're like, you lose the game then. And Diviner's Portent does not have that mode. So I think it makes it quite a bit worse than those other two cards. And the scry is not worth it. You're going to play the other two cards.
I totally agree. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
All right. Let's go on to another category of cards, which is auras and in equipment. Because there were four commander decks this year, and there was a dungeon deck, a dice deck, and then an auras and equipment deck. So we're going to talk about the aura and equipment kind of in its own category. The first one's interesting.
The first one is Holy Avenger. It's two and a white for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature has double strike. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, you may put an aura card from your hand onto the battlefield attached to it. Equip two and a white.
So this is interesting because it cheats mana cost on some big auras, but also because it gives the creature double strike, you hit them and then it triggers and you put the aura on, and for the second hit with double strike, the aura will be there. And then also when you hit them the second time, you'll get a second aura onto the creature. So when you deal combat damage to a player, you can potentially get two auras for free from your hand onto that same creature.
It's pretty great. And actually, this is a pretty normal rate. Like, Fire Shrieker is not something that we are like super excited about. It's equipment that gives double strike, but it's close to this equip cost.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is not an embarrassing card. One thing that Wizards is doing, though, that's
not embarrassing. That is just a hearty endorsement from DJ. That is not embarrassing.
Well, here's the thing that pushes me in two different directions. It's because Wizards is maybe not pushing, but giving us access to equipment and auras overlapping.
Yep.
And a lot of times that wasn't as good. You know what I mean? Like, you wanted either all equipment, so all your equipment synergized, or you want all auras, so all your auras synergized. And there weren't enough things that overlap that did both. And this is one of them that does kind of overlap. And I think that opens up a new area for us to look at.
Yeah. And it feels like this can go in an aura deck.
Yes.
But doesn't necessarily go in an equipment deck, which is weird because it is an equipment. Which is kind of a downside, right? Because in your aura deck, you probably have a lot of things that bring enchantments back and make use of them, whereas the Holy Avenger is going to go out there and maybe it gets destroyed and you can't bring it back and things like that.
Yeah, I think you'd rather want this to be an aura
than
because you also want other auras in the deck, you know? But it's I like that push and pull a little bit. Gives us some deck building restrictions.
Interestingly, what auras do you think you would want to cheat out onto the creature for free? Like, that? This seems like a fun game to play.
This is a fun game to play. How about the biggest Eldrazi Conscription? 8 mana for a tribal enchantment, Eldrazi Aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +10/+10 and has trample and annihilator too.
Now, the annihilator won't do anything because you're already attacking. Obviously, they'll do stuff the next turn, but not this current turn. But still, +10/+10 and trample could matter.
Next up, Celestial Mantle.
Hmm?
3 white for an aura enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +3/+3. Whenever enchanted creature deals combat damage to a player, double its controller's life total.
So you know you already hit him once, you're probably going to hit him with the second shot, so you're going to double your life total. That seems good.
And then
next turn you double again.
Double.
So you've
double strike, double.
Boy.
That's great. And then, of course, there's a good old Colossification. 5 green green for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature, when Colossification enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature. That doesn't matter because it's already attacking. Yep. So doesn't matter if it taps it. And then enchanted creature gets +20/+20.
So if it's your commander, they're dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's immediate death on your commander. Unless your commander has zero power somehow. But I guess it couldn't because you've already dealt combat damage to them. So it has some amount of power.
There you go.
Okay.
Instant death.
Magical Christmas land, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit of magical Christmas land.
All right. The next aura and equipment card is Mantle of the Ancients. 3 white-white for enchantment aura, enchant creature you control. When Mantle of the Ancients enters the battlefield, return any number of target auras and or equipment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to enchanted creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for each aura and equipment attached to it. This is a cool recovery card, and one of the things that Voltron really, really has problems with is they get off to fast starts, they get a bunch of stuff piled onto one creature, then somehow that creature gets removed, and now they're just stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
And this is a way you can, like, play a creature, or maybe not even, like, that creature gets removed. Somebody Vandal Blasts you, somebody, you know, Austere Commands. Somebody does a thing that destroys all of the Voltron pieces, and then you're just like, oh, what am I going to do? So this is a way that's like, boom, in one foul swoop, I will get all that stuff back from the graveyard, piled back onto a creature, and maybe kill some people out of nowhere.
Yeah, it gets you back in the game. A lot of times, these Voltron decks, they have to commit a lot of stuff to the board, and it means that they're kind of easier to disassemble, to interrupt, and stuff like that. That's one of your things about Voltron decks. You're like,
that's why they're bad.
I mean, yeah, that's honestly
the reality.
Like, yeah. Why they're not good. Yeah. I think more and more cards like this help bolster that to make sure that there are fewer feel bads when you're playing and will make the deck a little bit better.
At least you have some ability to still punch later in the game if you've been thwarted. You can at least be like, okay, if I draw Mantle of the Ancients, I have a chance to come back here.
Exactly.
To recover.
Retether is a similar card, and that's played in 30% of aura decks. So if you have an aura deck, you're probably going to play this card too.
Yeah, and it itself is an aura, so it seems like it goes better in an aura deck than an equipment deck.
For sure.
All right. The next one is Robe of Stars. This is interesting. I think this could see play outside of Aura and Equipment decks. It is 1W for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +0/+3, 3 toughness. But it has Astral Projection, which is you can pay 1W, and equipped creature phases out. And it has an equip cost of 1. So phasing out means that you treat the creature, or you treat the creature and anything attached to it as though they don't exist until its controller's next turn. And then right before untap, it will phase back in, untap, and then exist again.
I love this level of protection.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times you want to interrupt removal. That's fine. But you got like Swiftfoot Boots and other things like that. Board wipes. You know, you want to interrupt that too.
That's the big one.
Yeah.
That's the big one I'd say is like there's certain board wipes that are really, like, you get Darksteel Plate on your thing, you give it Hexproof, you feel like, oh man, it's so hard to kill this, they say Cyclonic Rift. And you're just like, ah, because, yeah, sure, it all goes back to my hand, but that's like 27 mana worth of stuff. It's going to take me 3 turns to redeploy, I'm going to be dead by then. Robe of Stars says, no, just pay 1W, the creature and everything attached to it don't exist. So the Cyclonic Rift hits everything else, and then it comes back into play with all the stuff on, and you're still good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And I think that there need to be more things that fight against cards like Cyclonic Rift.
Yep.
Also, this isn't just protection for your creature, like you mentioned. Like, they single target removal a key aura on it and stuff like that. So I think that this is just really solid in a lot of different decks.
I don't think just equipment decks. Like, this is a good protection piece for your commander. That's, I think, you know, later in the game, better than a Swiftfoot Boots or something like that. Because there are ways around the Hexproof. Or even like, you know, Darksteel Plate or something like that, there are ways around the indestructible. Mm-hmm. Phasing is really, like, there's not a lot of ways around it. You have to hold 2 mana open.
Yeah.
If you have an equipment deck, though, where you can maybe move this around at instant speed and stuff like that, you might be able to... Activate it? Like, right? It puts the phasing on the stack, right? Like, that should work, I believe.
Pay it.
It says put that phasing on the stack.
Instant speed equip over. Yes, you can.
Yeah. See, so that seems really, really powerful, because one of the really big downsides of equipment decks, even if they're Voltron or not, is just you have to commit a lot to the board. And if that ever gets blown up, you often cannot win anymore. So just the ability to be like, okay, I'm ahead on board right now. I'll just have Robe of the Stars up with a lot of mana, and it'll be really hard to mess with me. It's like a mini Teferi's Protection that they can see. He's reading it like, will that work? I'm not sure.
Equipped creature phases out.
Once you put it on the stack, what else? And if you moved it over, would it be like, well, it's not equipped anymore.
I know,
when
that's
it resolves.
What I mean. It's like,
all right. Well, listen, maybe the
tell us in the comments down below.
But it does protect any one thing for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And that's all we needed to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Pumps toughness. If you care about that in Voltron decks, I don't know, Doran decks, something
sure,
like that.
Sure.
Some good stuff like that. Oh, something fun. I mean, we've seen an aura do something like this, like Flicker Form. Flicker Form is a 1 and a white for an aura chant creature. It gets 2 white-white to activate it.
Too much. 4 mana is too much. I used to play Flicker Form a little, but it's got to go. It's too much mana.
It's just wait. So, number one, we've kind of acknowledged that this is better because we've
most
seen something. Yeah, we've seen something that like Flicker Form and been like, it's just way too taxing to be able to do that. But anyways, Flicker Form basically says exile enchanted creature and all auras attached to it at the beginning of the next end step. Return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. If you do, return other cards exiled this way under their owner's control attached to the creature. Okay. So it exiles it and everything on and makes sure that the rules work and puts it back into play. Flicker Form does get you ETBs, and this does not.
Yep.
But it has been used to do some cute stuff with cards like Mangara of Korindor.
Yeah, Mangara, you can activate, and in response, before the ability resolves, you can blink Mangara out, so you don't have to exile Mangara and the thing, the target permanent. It'll just exile the target permanent.
Yep, so you can tap Mangara, and then
Robo of Stars phases out, yeah.
Yeah, and that's only 2 mana to be able to do that, and then the thing gets exiled, and your Mangar comes right back to do it again every turn.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you need haste, but yeah, I've done a lot of that Mangaring. One thing to note about Robo of Stars and phasing is that it does not leave the battlefield and come back when you phase out, so you won't get ETBs again.
Yeah.
Sorry to break your dreams out there, everybody. All right. The last Orin equipment we're going to talk about, this is the last one, right?
Yep.
Is Wand of Orcus, a very famous D&D item, I'm told. Hmm. 2 and a black for a legendary artifact equipment has 3 to equip. It says, whenever equipped creature attacks or blocks, it and zombies you control gain death touch until end of turn. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create that many 2/2 black zombie creature tokens. That many meaning as much damage as you dealt. So if you swing with a 10-10 wearing this and it gets through, you will get 10 2/2 black zombie creature tokens. And they don't enter the battlefield tapped like zombies often do.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it gives that death touch, so it does disincentivize the blocking part.
What's its equip cost?
3.
3. Okay.
So it's 3 to play, 3 to equip. Same as Holy Avenger, kind of. It doesn't have the black
and we have found that equip cost is really prohibitive. Like, it is
you
very
want 3
hard
and
to move
2.
Around. Yes, you do.
The difference between 2 to equip and 3 to equip is huge.
Mm-hmm.
If it's 3 or more to equip, you often, like, never pay that. Like, you equip it one time and that's it. But one time could be a lot. Like, you put it out there in a swing for enough. I mean, even 5 2/2s is a lot.
It's a ton.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, Grave Titan is a real card that kind of does a similar thing to this. I mean, it always comes with 2. Well, it's not the exact same thing, but.
What about the death touch? Does giving your zombies death touch, does that matter? Does it make
maybe
your zombies
better
attacking?
Maybe it's in a zombie deck. Yeah, it does, but it really makes them better blockers.
Because
often, like, 5 2/2s are not, you know, at a certain point in the game are not doing much, but they'll thwart attacks for a long time if they've, you know, got this thing out.
Yeah. So even in zombie decks, you're not super excited about the death touch, but creating zombies. I mean, I have a Tana the Bloodsower deck.
A Tana gets out on control sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, 2 red-green for a 2/2 Elf Druid with Trample. Whenever Tana the Bloodsower deals combat damage to a player, create that many 1/1 green Sapperling creature tokens.
Yeah.
And so that's Sapperlings, you know. You have a little bit more control because it's in your command zone. You have the deck built around it, but
she's got Trample too.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
But creating zombies is awesome. So this does have the top end power level. It's just that 3 to cast, 3 to equip clunkiness that's kind of keeping us from being super excited about it.
Yeah, and Tana is your commander, so you can build your entire deck around it. It's hard to build your entire deck around Wand of Orcus, right?
Would you just stick it in a zombie deck to just equip to some random big old zombie to attack with?
Maybe. I don't think I do. I think it's probably too slow. 6 mana is just a lot for that. Your zombie deck does not generally have trouble making zombies. Like, that's not what it's worried about. It can do that with all of its cards.
Maybe if you have some general that has Trample or something like that, like a Voltron deck or something like that. You know, they say that sometimes Voltron decks really like Vigilance because you attack all in and you leave yourself open. You know, maybe you attack all in, you have Trample, you have ways to get damage through, and then you back yourself up with a ton of zombies.
Yeah, that could be a thing.
It could be.
All right.
Those are the auras and equipment. So right. Now we've covered all of the really like narrower kind of archetypes, the dungeons, the dice rolling, the orbs right. and equipment. Now we're getting into just sort of the general cards that can, I think they can fit in a lot of different decks.
So we're going to go by color here. We're going to start with white. Let's start with Valiant Endeavor. 4 white for a sorcery. Roll 2d6, that's dice, and choose one result. Destroy each creature with power greater than or equal to that result. So you want a low number if you want to destroy all creatures. Then create a number of 2/2 white knight creature tokens with vigilance equal to the other result. So let's say you roll 2 dice and you get a 2 and a 4. If you choose 2, then you'll destroy each creature with power greater than or equal to 2. And then the other dice was a 4, so you get 4 2/2 white knight creature tokens.
And because you resolve the spell in order,
yep.
those knights will not be destroyed.
You'll always get the knights.
You'll always get the knights.
They won't die, yeah.
Yeah. It seems like a cool board wipe. You know, a little bit of control. Like, let's say that you have a bunch of 2/2 knights.
Right.
You know, you can pick the role that hopefully doesn't kill your own knights and then add to your army.
Right.
Here's the thing about board wipes. A lot of times you rely on them to do exactly what you want exactly when you want them, because that's how you save yourself from death.
Yeah.
And when you have to pay 6 mana, that's not exactly when you want. And when you have to roll dice, that's not doing exactly what you want it to.
Imagine you roll a 5 and a 6.
Oof.
You could be like, okay, well, I destroy all creatures power 5 or greater, and you're just still dead to whatever like was
killing
you. Like
the zombie army,
yeah,
or
exactly.
those, you know, saprolings or something like that. You're just still dead.
That can definitely happen. So it's... That's what worries me. I like what you said there, which is like, I would just rather have a card that I know is going to do what I need it to do. You put in a card and it's filling a role, mm-hmm. and this one is filling 2 roles kind of badly, right? You don't know exactly how much stuff it's going to kill, and you also don't know exactly how many tokens it's going to make. So that seems pretty iffy to me.
It is, but it could be amazing. You know, it could kill exactly what you want to, have your own things dodge it, right. and then add to your army of knights.
In which case, you'll feel like, you know, you won the lottery, but like, yeah, what's...
For sure.
What's the odds that that's going to happen?
You know, if you're playing a card like Martial Coup, you know, right. where you are going to be paying a lot of mana to board wipe and create things, then maybe this is fine. Or, you know, maybe this replaces Phyrexian Rebirth, another 6 mana wipe that leaves you with something on the battlefield. But if you want a Wrath of God, play Wrath of God.
Yeah, I agree. All right, one more white card we want to talk about. Fae Steed, 2 white for a 4/4 creature elk. Whenever Fae Steed attacks, another target creature you control gains indestructible until end of turn. That's whatever. And it says, whenever a creature or planeswalker you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card.
I like drawing cards. But in a white deck that attacks, in a white deck that wants other creatures on the battlefield to attack with Fae Steed for that other ability, I'm more afraid of a board wipe than single target removal.
Also, like, how often would you draw a card with this in a game? Like, once, maybe twice, seems like about the top end of what could happen. Off many games, maybe you won't even draw one single card. A lot of times the thing they're going to destroy is not a creature or a planeswalker. It's an artifact or enchantment. You're right. So, yeah, I think this is not the way white wants to get card draw. If it was cheap,
the 4-drop slot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, make it a 2-drop, a 2-mana 2/2 that only has that ability, and I like it a lot better.
I do too,
because
actually.
The cost is so much lower. But man, a 4-mana card?
We've seen so many just like 4-drop powerhouses that just get slammed in commander decks.
Like, Smothering Tithe is at that cost, so I need this card to do a lot if it costs 4 mana. So I don't really love it, unfortunately. I think if it was a Hate Bear, a 2-mana 2/2, then all of a sudden it would just get a lot better. So and it would not be broken. So,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
He's very cute, though. Look at that elk.
Yeah, reindeer. Sorry, it's a reindeer.
Wizards disagree.
That's not a grandma, though. Is there? All we need is a grandma, and we're good.
That's great.
Okay. We've got blue cards, black cards, red cards, green cards, colorless, and multicolored cards still to go. So we got a lot still to talk about. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Okay, we are back. We are talking about the cards that go in your 99 from the Forgotten Realms Commander product. We are moving on to the color blue now.
Let's talk about Phantom Steed. 3 to blue for a 4/3 creature horse illusion. It's got flash, and when Phantom Steed enters the battlefield, exile another target creature you control until Phantom Steed leaves the battlefield. Whenever Phantom Steed attacks, create a tapped and attacking token that's a copy of the exiled creature, except it's an illusion in addition to its other types. Sacrifice that token at the end of combat.
Okay, so you exile one of your things. It could be protection for one of your own things, right?
Yes.
So no, in response
with angels and stuff like
that. Yeah, in response to a board wipe, you cast this, it exiles a thing, your thing dies, and now your original thing you were protecting comes back.
It's a not a very great baseline, but it exists. We would do it.
Yeah. I mean, really, you're playing it so that hopefully you're going to make multiple copies of whatever you exiled over the course of a few turns.
Exactly. I mean, one thing that stinks, though, is that you have to attack with this. It's a 4/3. It looks like it flies, but it doesn't. And so you're not going to often be able to get that attacking trigger, like the creating the token. Like, it's going to be hard to get it over and over and over again and keep getting those like cool ETB values that you might be thinking of.
It's not right, but it's not the worst if it dies, right?
You're right. You get,
it depends on what you've exiled, but if you flash it in on the end step before your turn, and let's say it's Moldrifter.
Yep.
That's what I would want to do. You probably get the one attack in right then. You draw two cards. And then the next turn, maybe
if it dies, then the Mole Drifter comes back. You draw two more cards.
Yeah, but you're probably getting it because nobody knew about it, and it's on the end step before your turn. Like, it's a 4/3. You can usually find somebody in the before turn 6 or 7 that you can attack with 4 power that's not going to block.
I agree.
And then you get the Mole Drifter or whatever it was. You draw a couple cards, or you ramp, or you have some other destroy an artifact or do something. And then you attack the second time, you make another copy, this time they block, it dies, and then your creature comes back into play and you get another ETB. So 3 ETBs off something, even though it died. Doesn't seem that bad.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a baseline, like, for what it might do. I mean, it's not great.
What would you rather have? The Restoration Angel, where you kind of like get that for sure blink ability, or would you rather have this more interesting, like higher top end? You know what I mean? Because if you keep attacking with this and keep getting those ETBs over and over again, like this can like run away with a game. So would you, do you think you'd rather have that one flicker moment, or do you think you'd rather have this sort of bigger upside of attacking and creating them over and over again?
Probably the one flicker moment, just because it's more versatile about when you can do it too, which this one you have to like, it's during combat. You have to kind of set it up a little bit. Also, we just know from our stats episodes that combat doesn't actually happen that much in a game. Like, you are not attacking 6 times with the creature. You're just not attacking that many times in the whole game, generally. People just think attacking is happening a lot more than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially in a blue deck. Like, maybe on a Boros deck, you're planning to attack, like, every turn. But in general, that's not what blue decks are looking to do. Some are. But, yeah.
I agree. I think that this could be fun. And I think that sometimes it can run away with the game. But I'm not, like...
Like, am I putting it in my rune deck, which is a flicker deck? I don't know that I am.
But are you putting it in your Adrix and Nev twin caster decks, sort of the token doubling up decks?
That's interesting. Because,
you know, they, when one or more, if one or more tokens would be created under your control, create twice that many tokens instead.
That's pretty cool.
So, or does this go in your Yarok the Desecrated deck?
No.
Double ETBs and stuff like that.
And you get to, this is an ETB trigger, right? So you'd exile 2 things.
Fancy.
Yeah. Volo's another one where something like that might happen. Yeah, that's interesting. I also thought Sundial of the Infinite's pretty good with this because you don't have to exile the creature or sacrifice the token at the beginning of the next end step.
And there are a lot of decks out there that want Sundial of the Infinite for like their whole deck. And so having one more thing that works with it is great, even though you're ending at the end of combat.
Yeah. Obeka, right? Like that.
Yeah, Obeka is a good one.
So maybe it goes in decks like that. So there are some uses.
For sure.
Okay. All right, you want to read the next one?
Sure. Next, we have Rod of Absorption. 2 in a blue for an artifact. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, exile it instead of putting it into a graveyard as it resolves. Then you can pay X and tap it. Sacrifice Rod of Absorption. You may cast any number of spells from among the cards exiled with Rod of Absorption with total mana value X or less without paying their mana costs. So it says without paying their mana costs, but you
did play X.
But you are paying X.
So you would have had to pay their mana cost.
Yes. So you are paying their mana cost by activating this. So
it's an interesting card as I think about it here. It's a player. So it's not just your opponents. So any instant or sorcery gets cast on the table while this is out, it doesn't go to the graveyard. It gets exiled. And then at some point later, you can cash this in for some amount of the cards that have been exiled over the course of the game with it. You know, this is a thing where if you created a lot of mana somehow, this is going to do a lot maybe, but maybe not. Sometimes you've created a lot of mana and you're like, what are the instants and sorceries in everybody's graveyards? And they're like, you know, Rampart Growth, Cultivate, a counterspell, and something else. And you're like, that's it?
So let's imagine if this is the mid game and, you know, you've already paid 3 to get this on the battlefield and then you tap it and you Farseek, Brainstorm, Swords to Plowshares.
I mean, that's pretty good. Like 3 cards. And you can do this at instant speed, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not bad. But... Did they cast a Farseek, a Brainstorm, and a Sword Splashers while this was out?
I mean, in the scenario, the scenario they did. But you know what? But you're right. Yeah. You dodge a lot of the early game ramp. You dodge a lot of the early cantripping that you might do to sort of clean up your hand a little bit. So what about 2 removal spells and a card draw spell? I think it's fine.
Not bad. I mean, it's not amazing.
Yeah. I think that that's the line that we're at. I think it's that it's not quite amazing because it's slow. You know, I think that if you have a card like Snapcaster Mage, you know what's in your deck, you know what's in your graveyard, you can look at it.
You already like the cards in your graveyard because they're the cards you put in your deck.
Yeah. And with this one, it can still sort of act like a Snapcaster Mage a little bit, just it sits on the battlefield so everyone knows it's there.
But it can be bad for you too if you have things like Snapcaster Mage, because it exiled all the instants and sorceries that you played while it was out.
It's true.
And if somebody destroyed it, or you just haven't cracked it yet, now your Snapcasters and your Torrential Gearhulks and stuff look a lot worse because you don't, a lot of your stuff didn't go to the graveyard. That was the other question I had. Is there a value to playing this as sort of pseudo graveyard hate? Because it does cause instants and sorceries not to go to the graveyard. And that is a big thing. Like, people will replay their instants and sorceries a lot. And a lot of, like, synergy combo stuff does have to do with, like, sort of replaying the same cards out of your graveyard.
Yeah, you're like, all of my opponents have Mizzix's Mastery. I'm just not going to crack it at all. Look, we are telling you all the time, you need graveyard hate. And so if this plays count? A role of graveyard hate in those specific circumstances, I think that it's fine. I think that that's not the majority of the reason why you want it in there. You want to cast your spells again, and you are okay with something that does it in a really clunky fashion.
Yeah, I don't know, because most of those decks where I want to cast my spells again have Mastery and things. I don't want to be exiling my own spells, because what if somebody removes this? That stuff just stays exiled. That I don't like.
Yeah, you're
right. So I think it's a little bit too risky to play in your Spells Matters decks, in which case it's really only useful as, like, stop your opponent's stuff from going to their graveyard, and then hopefully I get good enough stuff where I do want to cast that later, but now I'm really relying on my opponents, so I just don't like the card.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, yeah.
Those are the only two blue cards we were going to talk about. We're moving on to black now. The first one is Death Tyrant. 4 and a black for a 4/6 Beholder Skeleton. Has Menace. It also has negative energy cone, which means whenever an attacking creature you control or a blocking creature an opponent controls dies, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token, and then you can pay 5 and a black and return Death Tyrant from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So you can always just return it for 6 mana. It only costs 5 to cast.
I mean, getting it back for 6 mana over and over again is pretty good. Like, I can see this coming back in the late game for sure.
It's not recasted either, so you can return it from your graveyard to the battlefield, so you can do that at instant speed.
Awesome.
So infinite mana, and this will do stuff, I guess. You already have infinite mana. You don't need this, but yeah.
do you think about the forced combat going on? Like, if you're in a situation where there's a lot of combat, you create a bunch of 2/2s. Do you think that maybe this belongs in attacking decks, in sort of those decks that have Disrupt Decorum and Goad in it and things like that?
Maybe. Those decks cause your opponents to have to attack. This cares if your opponent's blocking creatures die. So it could actually...
Yeah, you can have them block each other.
Right. But you can't... Yeah. Goad doesn't cause people to block. It just causes them
to
attack.
Absolutely right, yes.
You could actually have a reverse incentive here where they are like, well, I might as well attack you because your blocking creatures don't make 2/2s for you. Whereas if I'm Jimmy and I attack DJ, that's not the greatest because his blocking creatures will make 2/2s for...
You're right.
So it might actually be... The incentive structure might be improperly placed here. It does make them less likely to block your stuff when you attack because your attacking creatures dying will make you 2/2s. So there's that part. It's more likely to make your stuff unblockable than to make you unattackable, if that makes sense.
So feels very aggressive, actually. It messes with combat for sure, because if I'm attacking with 2/2, you for sure don't want to block with a 2/2, because then I get 2/2 zombies from that situation. Yeah.
Like, you don't want to trade.
That sounds great to me. And then even you chumping, you know, my attacks leads to more zombies.
This could be used. I was thinking, like, if you have Vidalcanora or something that allows you to cast a board wipe at instant speed, you can attack with everything, cast your board wipe. It doesn't say they have to die because of combat damage. So then you can kill everything, but still keep a board.
That's cool.
Another reason Vidalcanora is awesome. But that's a pretty fringe case. I don't know. There's a lot going on in this card, but it doesn't add up to a lot in my mind. There are some Attacking Matters decks where maybe it kind of matters.
Yeah, the Lieutenant in the newest Rakdos Precon, where this is a part of, you know, they care about attacking and goading. Karzikar, the Eye Tyrant. And then there's Carter Doomscourge from Kaldheim.
Yep.
And then there's like Thantis the Warweaver that wants everyone to attack everywhere. So there are decks out there that could use this card. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays. I didn't think of that negative incentive to attack you rather than attack other people. It's interesting.
Yeah. If you're goading enough, or Cardor's not technically goading, but it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Then maybe it doesn't matter, where nobody can attack you. So then that gets a little better for you, I think.
That's cool. All right. Next up, we have Grim Hireling. 3 and a black for a 3/2 tiefling rogue.
Tiefling, yep.
Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create 2 treasure tokens. Black, sacrifice X treasure tokens. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery.
Okay, so whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player. So you can actually get up to 6 total treasures in a 4-player game.
Ooh.
But if you hit one player with 4 creatures, you still only get 2 treasure. You have to hit 3 different players to get 2 treasure from each of them.
If you're even getting 2 treasures, I like this card. Like, yeah, if you can get 2 treasures a turn, then this is great. You know, this is 4 mana. It ramps you 2 mana. Like, it's the kind of rate that we really, really like. And treasures we found are sometimes more useful than other forms of ramp.
I mean, in an unblockable deck, this could become like 6 treasure a turn, which is insane.
This is great. I think that some people are going to be looking at that activated ability and like think like, oh, this card's not good. And you're right. That activated ability is not great. But I don't like it at all.
Yeah, because it's just not a very efficient use of treasure generally, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to sack 5 treasures and pay a mana to do something. That's 6 mana. I'll just cast something that costs 6 mana that does better than destroy a creature, right? You wouldn't play a card that was like 6 mana, kill a creature.
Sorcery speed, too.
Yeah. So I think you're just more likely, this is a treasure creator for your deck. It's a ramp card in your deck. If you have enough ways where you're aggressive enough and you're always getting attacks through, or you're unblockable and you know you're going to be able to attack, this gets really crazy if you can attack at least 2 players and you know your deck can do that most games. Because 4 mana a turn is Smothering Tithe levels of good. I mean, Smothering Tithe also has the thing where the wheels, or people draw a lot of cards with Consecrated Sphinx or something. But still, like, it's a lot of treasure, and it can... A lot of what we're trying to do, I think, in Commander anymore is set up for, like, one explosive turn somewhere around turn, like, 7, 8, 9.
Yep.
And this can really do that, right? Save 2 treasures, get 4 treasures, and now all of a sudden, on turn 7, I've got 18, 19 mana. And that can often catapult you into either winning the game on the spot or just getting to an insurmountable lead.
I think it's great.
All right. Hellish Rebuke. This card's interesting. I thought it sucked, but then I saw one of your notes and I was like, oh, it's better than I thought. Hellish Rebuke. 2 and a black. For an instant, until end of turn, permanents your opponent's control gain. When this permanent deals damage to the player who cast Hellish Rebuke, sacrifice this permanent. You lose 2 life. Such weird templating, but I was thinking of this as creatures in combat, and in creatures in combat, it sucks because you're like, okay, so it has to hit me, so I got to take all the damage, and then they got to sack it and lose the 2 life. I really didn't notice that word permanent.
Yeah, and I think if you're just thinking about it in the creature terms, I think it's bad.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
You look at a card like No Mercy, which is 2 black for an enchantment. Whenever a creature successfully deals damage to you, destroy it. You know?
And that just sits there on the battlefield forever and does that.
Exactly.
This is like until end of turn. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really think that you do have to be playing in a meta where that permanent text matters.
But it can really matter because you had a great example here of Purphoros.
Purphoros, man.
Purphoros is a really hard card for mono black or Brakdos, Dimir to deal with, right?
Anything to deal with. Yeah, because it's an indestructible, and in most cases, it sticks around as an enchantment. It doesn't reach a creature.
An indestructible enchantment's very hard to kill for most colors, but this says they have to sacrifice it, and it gives all their permanents the text of, if it dealt damage to you, sacrifice it. So that's really cool usage, and I think there are probably a lot of cards.
Think about the Nekusar deck.
Yeah.
You know, that has it deals damage and stuff like that. Mm. Some of them have you lose life, but there's a lot of deals damage. Think about any of these that kind of get around combat damage. And there's a lot of different things out there that try to circumvent combat damage, just deal that damage directly. And it's cool to have an out to them. Even though I would not play this in a normal deck, I'd need it to work in my meta.
You need to know your meta, but yeah, there's the Goblin Bombardments of the world, and there's also things like my Tim deck would hate this card. So yeah, there's some cool outside the pumpkin thinking for that card. I think it might be playable in certain spots. Okay, on to the red cards. We're moving along.
We have an equipment that didn't go into the equipment and aura section because it's a little bit different.
It's better than those ones as well.
It's better than those. It's Fiend Lash, 1 and a red for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has reach. Whenever equipped creature is dealt damage, it deals damage equal to its power to target player or planeswalker. Equip 2 and a red. So steep equip cost.
But it becomes a stop hitting yourself piece.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Really cool. And it gives it reach. I like it. It's like, it can block everything.
Yeah, it can block everything. This can go on really like big creatures and then sort of give them another way of attacking, which is very interesting.
Yeah, you don't want to block it because it's a big creature coming in. So if you blocked it, you would take a ton of damage or whatever.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, just like your defenders. I mean, I've talked about the stop hitting yourself deck for years, and there's been a few new pieces added, so maybe I have to because I took it apart, just to spoiler alert out there, because it sucked. But that was 5 years ago or 4 years ago now. I think there's maybe enough pieces have been made in the interim that it's good again. I don't know.
I also like that this can be a little bit different. It's not just the brash taunter redirect. It's like, well, now little bits of stop hitting yourself can actually be huge amounts of damage. So you use a card like Pyrohemia, you know, 2 red for an enchantment at the beginning of the end step. If no creatures are on the battlefield, sacrifice Pyrohemia, pay a red. Pyrohemia deals 1 damage to each creature and each player. So instead of just, you know, the normal Brash Taunter, you pay 1, it does 1 to everything, and then Brash Taunter goes, aha, I took 1, and deals 1 more damage. This one, if it's on a big creature, it just be like, oh, I took 1, I'm going to deal 5 damage,
yeah.
I'm going to deal 7 damage, or whatever. So I like that ability of
it's a more enrage enabler almost.
It's definitely more enrage than stop hitting yourself, but enrage is hitting yourself too, so it kind of like blends the two, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't think it's, I still think it's a narrow card. It only goes in certain decks.
Oh, but it's for sure a narrow card.
But yeah, if maybe like a Xenagos deck or something would play something like this too, where it's, I'm swinging in with a 12-12.
Yeah,
it's now a 14-12, and if you block it, which is normally what you would do, you're going to still take 12.
So as we're talking 14. About the stop hitting yourself deck, you know, let's just give a shout out to Reckless Endeavor.
Oh, I did want to talk about this card. Yeah.
Okay. 5 red for a sorcery. Roll 2d12 and choose 1 result. Reckless Endeavor deals damage equal to the result to each creature, and then create a number of treasure tokens equal to the other result.
So again, if you roll a 6 and a 7, it's going to deal 7 damage to all creatures, and you'll make 6 treasure, if that's the way you chose, which I'm assuming that's the way you would do it. The average roll on a d12 would be like a 6.5. Remember, you can't roll a 0.
Yeah. So 7 mana, six treasures, and 6 damage.
Yeah, 6.5 technically would be the average, right? So that sounds really good on paper. That sounds like quite good. It's basically free the spell, and it deals, it's like a free board wipe. Right? Like, it sounds like Blasphemous Act, kind of.
Ooh.
It does, though, when you say it in those terms. I end up with about the same...
It refunds your mana, but you got to have 7 to play it. Like, you got to have that 7 mana to be able to board wipe. And so, again, when we're talking about board wipes, we want them to be flexible. We want to be able to play them when we need them. And 7 is so much.
And sometimes you might roll a 2 and
a 5.
Oh, my
gosh. What if you roll a 2 and a 2 or something like that?
Yeah, it's all of a sudden, it's like, okay, cost me 5 mana and only did 4 damage to everything, which didn't kill the big stuff. And I like what you said there. You cannot cast this unless you have at least 7 mana. Yes, it will refund you, but it's a mulligan in your hand until you've done that. The thing about Blasphemous Act is you can cast it for 1 mana on the front end. So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure people didn't think of it like Blasphemous Act.
Yeah.
All right.
This is a weird one. Let's go for it.
This is a really weird card in red. You know, red every once in a while just has this card where you're like, wait, I got to read that thing 17 times. Wheel of Misfortune, shout out. Okay, this is called Share the Spoils, 1 in red for an enchantment. When Share the Spoils enters the battlefield or an opponent loses the game, I don't know why that had to be there, exile the top card of each player's library. So when you play this, each player, including yourself, exiles their top card. Or if somebody dies in the game, then each player exiles the top card of the library. Okay, during each player's turn, that player may play a land or cast a spell from among the cards exiled with Share the Spoils, and they may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that spell. When they do, exile the top card of their library. So let's walk through this. I play Share the Spoils. All 4 players exile the top card of their library. It is during my turn, so I can cast one of those cards that has been exiled or play a land from among them, and then whichever one I do, it doesn't matter. I'm going to exile another card from my library when I play that.
Yeah.
So that the pool of cards will stay the same for the most part.
Yeah, in a 4-player game, it'll always be 4. And that's why they want you to be able to do it again when someone dies.
Yeah.
Because they want it to keep going.
Oh, it theoretically, stays at 4.
Yeah, because theoretically, there could be 4 cards exiled just from one deck. And then if that person died, they'd all go away. So then it wants to restart it up
again. I guess they don't always want it to be 4, because if you start with a 5-player game, but it'll always be at the number
of
players in the game.
Until someone dies, and then it'll keep going. Just now, the math is a little bit different.
So, you can only play one of the cards on your turn, though. Because during each player's turn, that player may play a land or cast a spell from among the cards exiled with Share the Spoils. So you can't, like, cast one of them. Oh, I still got mana. Cast another one. There's 4 cards there, or whatever, if it's a 4-player game. You choose one of them. You play it. You exile the top card of your library, which goes into the pool. And now I pass the turn to DJ. And he can do the same thing from the cards in the middle there. But again, it'll only be one. Then he'll exile the top card of his library. It's kind of like, when you describe it in this way, it reminds me of a Howling Mind type of effect, right? You play a card that gives card advantage to the entire table. You get to use it first because, you know, some, you know, because at some point it might, it probably gets to the point where there's four lands there.
Yeah.
Which
would
is
play
not
a
the,
land from there. Yeah, I would do
but
that.
But that's probably not the best if you have lands in your hand.
You're right.
So the person that gets...
You want to leave lands there so there's fewer options from someone else. So you make someone else play the land and then flip over something really good.
Right. So it, you have a slight advantage, I'd say, in that. You get to go first, so you're going to pick the best card. And then it gets a little worse as it goes around because the lands will start to stack up.
I mean, if your deck is really specific or really, like, I don't know, narrow, then maybe the cards that you add to the pile don't help everyone else.
True. That's a good point. Like, you have a really narrow strategy where your cards aren't good outside of your strategy very often. That could be a thing. I think also just red and white tend to be okay playing Howling Mind type effects where they're like, listen, I don't have as much card advantage in my colors. So giving the entire table card advantage is actually good for me because me having access to card advantage is way better than a blue deck that already has its own card advantage. Like, one extra card to DJ's deck may not be that big of a deal because he already has a bunch of cards in his deck that draw him cards. Whereas to me, I don't. So him drawing his seventh card in a turn is not as good as me drawing my second, if that makes sense.
It does, yes.
So, I don't know. It is a weird card. It's interesting, but I don't think it's probably that great.
I don't think it's that great either, especially...
It basically just is the same philosophy as would you play Howling Mind if you're not in a Nekusar deck, right?
I think so, yes, I agree.
And sometimes the answer is yes, I've done that, but it's rare.
I think it's rare too, especially because there's a lot of other impulse draw out there. Like, red is not that hard up for card draw, and this one opens it up to everyone else now too.
Anymore, red is actually really good at card advantage with all the impulsive draw and the wheel effects and things like that.
If you have a card, if you have a Dranith Magistrate, your opponents can't play. One in a blue for a 1/3 human wizard. Your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands.
Oh, so congratulations. You've created a only you get the extra card advantage from the card.
Yeah, but then you eventually run out of their cards and you're just playing cards from your own deck. But
well, you play Dranith Magistrate, so they're going to try and kill you now because they can't cast their commanders. So that's what I've learned about that card. It seems awesome until you realize, right? Like, as soon as I play it, everyone tries to kill me.
All right. Next up, we have Vengeful Ancestor. 2 red for a 3/4 spirit dragon with flying. Whenever Vengeful Ancestor enters the battlefield or attacks, goad target creature. Whenever a goaded creature attacks, it deals 1 damage to its controller.
Okay, so goad we like. I like goad a lot.
I like goad a lot,
so
too.
So more goad is good, I think. Goading only one thing is less good.
It is.
It's on ETB, so you can shenanigans some blink and some...
ETB and attack.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry, I forgot I was on attack. You can do a little bit of shenanigans with the ETB, maybe reanimate it, blink it, things like that. Really, that second part maybe just makes it go in a goad deck where it's like, I'm already goading all creatures my opponents control over and over, so I may as well have that deal like 4, 5, 6 damage to them.
Yeah, just imagine if you had a Disrupt Decorum, and then each when they attack with all their creatures, it also deals 1 damage to them, and then they are leaving themselves open to your attack, which then deals 1 damage to you. It just kind of like... makes the damage build on itself, and that's what goad decks kind of want to do. They kind of want to have everyone take a little bit of extra damage so that creatures and creature attacking is a little bit more relevant.
I wish Vengeful Ancestor did the damage. It says the creature that it's attacking deals 1 damage to its controller, because now you can't Torbran, you can't Fiery Emancipation.
It's true.
You can't Grafted Exoskeleton, which is a little bit too bad. I wish they would have made Vengeful Ancestor doing the damage, because then I think you could make that 1 damage count for more. Because it's very rare in a game that people are attacking with 3 or more creatures. It's just, people just don't have that many creatures that often.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, it's an upgrade from Coveted Peacock. 3 blue for a 3/4 flyer. When it attacks, you goad target creature defending player controls.
Yeah, it's an upgrade of it. That's true. It's an upgrade over some card you've never seen played or heard of.
I've played the Peacock before.
I've watched a TV show on Peacock.
There are decks out there that goad, though. Remember Cardor?
Cardor.
Does not goad.
It doesn't say the words goad on it, right? So it won't even work with
it. It might actually still go in that deck anyways because you want to force combat, but it does not goad. But there are cards that do. Marisi, Breaker of the Coil does goad, you know? So it definitely goes in that deck.
All right. We're moving on to the green cards. Green card, I should say. There's only one we're going to talk about. It's called Druid of Purification. It's only one card, but it's a pretty good one. 3 and a green for a 2/3 human druid. When Druid of Purification enters the battlefield, starting with you, each player may choose an artifact or enchantment you don't control. Destroy each permanent chosen this way. So in a perfect world, I go, play this, target that, and then it goes to DJ, and he goes, well, I'm going to kill that other thing. And then it goes to Jimmy, and he says, I want to kill this other thing. And then it goes to Maria, and she says, I'm going to kill it, and you get four things, and none of them can be yours. You get the one thing you want, because you picked that, and then probably, like, you know, they're destroying each other's stuff, so it's probably all stuff that you want.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it has the potential. I mean, if you count this body, and it is a relevant body, I guess, 5 for 1?
Sure. I don't know if I count the 2-3 as... Yeah, but it's reusable, right? It's because it's when it enters the battlefield, so maybe it's flickering
things. Pot it away and all this other good stuff. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They can work against you.
Yeah.
So that you say, I want to kill this thing, and then they say, okay, well, I'm going to pick that one too.
If they all vote for the same thing or they're willing, yeah, then you'll only destroy one thing. But really, Reclamation Sage is already a card that we would play, and it's one more mana.
One of the most popular green cards ever in Commander decks. This is one more mana for the potential for killing more things.
I think in most games, you will kill four things when you play it, because you're going to go, boom, you know, I'm going to target one thing, and then it's going to go to the next player, and they're going to be like, well, that thing's already dead.
Yeah.
All it takes is one other player to not have an artifact.
Here's
or enchantment.
If you're killing my thing, am I going to vote for my own thing, or I'm going to be like, well, since
why do I want to help my other two? Yeah,
why you voted for it too? All right, I'm going to kill that.
And four artifacts is often early in the game, especially like all the artifacts and enchantments on the board. So they just like, well, I might as well pick something because they can't pick another one of my things because that's my one artifact.
Yeah, this is pretty comparable to like Pyr's Whim. 3 in a green, for each player, choose friend or foe. Each friend searches their library for a land card, puts it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffles their library. Each foe sacrifices an artifact or an enchantment they control.
I don't think it's comparable, though, because Pyr's Whim gets their worst thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Druid of Purification gets their best things. And there's a big difference between their worst thing and their best thing, because a treasure token is not very good. A clue token is not very good to get. Your soul ring is a lot better. Your skull clamp is a lot better.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
So we have something that's sees play, that's pretty playable, I think. Pyr's Whim was not something embarrassing. Reclamation Sage is a staple. And now we have something that's one more mana, more expensive, and potentially way more impactful.
I think way better than Pyr's Whim, and like pretty close to even with Reclamation Sage. I mean, one mana does matter.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Very cool.
That was our only green card, but it's a doozy, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we're now into the colorless cards. I like this first one.
I do too.
It's Ebony Fly, 2 mana for an artifact. It enters the battlefield tapped. You can tap it to add a colorless or diamond mana to your mana pool. So it's a 2-mana rock. But it says pay 4 and then roll a d6. Until end of turn, you may have Ebony Fly become a XX insect artifact creature token with flying. Sorry, not token. Creature with flying, where X is the result. So you pay 4, roll a d6. If you get a 3, it's a 3-3 flyer. Whenever Ebony Fly attacks, another target attacking creature gains flying until end of turn. So it not only flies itself, but it gives something flying. An interesting thing here is if you didn't like the number you rolled and you had more mana, you could roll again.
Oh, cool.
And try and make it bigger. What is the downside of playing a 2-mana rock that comes into play tapped?
It is later. Sometimes in the game, the way that it plays out, you want to use that mana immediately. Most of the time, though, if I'm playing like a ramp spell on 2, I'm okay with it entering the battlefield tapped.
Because most of the time, you don't have a 1-drop.
Exactly. Because if you had a 1-drop, you'd play it on turn 1. Very rarely would you then draw that 1-drop or have 2 1-drops in your hand to be able to need this to be able to tap.
And a lot of 1-drops don't care that much if you get it out right away.
Yeah, and you have Farseek and Signets. All of those, you know, can't do that as well. They also enter the battlefield tapped, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, so I think
Rampant Growth is one of the most staple cards in the format. That thing comes in tapped. So.
Absolutely. So I actually think that the biggest downside is that it doesn't fix your mana. It doesn't bother me that it enters the battlefield tapped.
But Mind Stone, Thought Vessel, those cards all see play. And generally speaking, when I'm in a non-green deck, I'm looking for as many 2-mana rocks as I can find.
You're absolutely right.
So, and then most of those do not have the upside of, hey, later in the game, it turns into a flying creature that is better than that, actually, jumps one of my other creatures.
Love that it jumps one of the other creatures. Yeah. That's huge. So I actually think getting other things through for damage is just gigantic in these kinds of decks.
So now it becomes a 2-mana ramp spell that's kind of a rogue's passage, right? It has the same has the same activation cost, actually less, because Rogue's Passage is 4 plus the land, so it costs you 5 mana. And this also becomes a creature, so even in certain decks, like, hey, I got Sword of Feast and Famine or something, I can at least suit this onto it, maybe get that 4 mana back. I actually think this card is quite good, and the cost of putting it in your deck is very low.
I think that it's quite good too, and I totally agree. I love these kinds of effects. I think that creature lands in general is something that I really like, and I've been I think that I've undervalued personally.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that when you have something that can then animate into a creature to be able to take out a planeswalker or threaten something that needs threatening when you need to, it ends up being really good. And this is another way of sort of getting that extra damage through when you need it. But on its baseline, it's like floor is like
2-mana rock, like great. Already very playable. Yeah. I think this is going to be an auto include in a lot of decks. I think we're going to see it quite a bit. It's very good.
Love it. All right. Next up, we have Underdark Rift. It's a land that taps for a colorless. You can tap 5 and tap this. Exile Underdark Rift, roll a d10. Put target artifact, creature, or planeswalker into its owner's library just beneath the top X cards of the library, where X is the result. Activate only as a sorcery.
So interesting. And it's a removal spell. Artifact, creature, or planeswalker only on a land. I mean, that is a removal, though. If you tuck something, even to the top of their library, is removal, technically. Yes. Like, it gets off the battlefield, it costs them a draw step.
They have to draw it again, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, have we seen removal on a land like this before?
I'm trying to think. Blast Zone is what I'm thinking of, but that's more of a board wipe.
Yeah, like if near Deadlands, that gives like minus
oh, right, minus right,
one,
right.
Or like they're these like tiny
there's
effects.
There's like a desert that does something similar, yeah. Right? If you sack another desert.
And then there's like the ones from Kaldheim that gives just like minus, minus and stuff like that.
Oh, right, or,
like,
right.
And then there's the one that does some damage. But like we're talking about like small effects. This is like answer your commander, you know, answer your big
creature. That's actually a really good point about commander. Like, if you do this to a commander, they put it in the command zone, right? They don't put a third from the top of their deck or whatever.
Oh. Yeah. So this, like, just kills a commander. That seems pretty good. It doesn't enter the battlefield tapped. Thumbs up.
Oh, so that's thumbs up. Creates colorless mana. About how many lands in your average, like, two-color deck would you say you can afford to have that don't tap for the colors of the... It goes... The more colors in your deck...
Yeah.
The more colors in your deck... The less you can afford to have a land that doesn't tap for colored mana. So once you get to 5 colors in your deck, you can barely even afford to have like 1 or 2 lands that don't tap for color. But at 2 colors, you can afford, I think, 6 or 7. That's high, but it depends.
That's high, but if you have a tuned enough mana base and stuff like that, because a lot of times when you're talking about a high-end mana base, you have multiple fetches, you have multiple duels and stuff like that. You're not running a lot of basics, so you're going to get
but 3 or 4 is pretty easily doable.
Oh, easy. I think you can do 3 or 4.
Does this then crack the top 3 or 4? Does this go above? What are the top colorless lands in the format that you play in a lot of decks? I play a lot of Winding Canyons if it's a creature's deck.
Play Strip Mine, like almost
Strip Mine.
I would almost play Strip Mine and Wasteland over a lot of other things.
Yeah, Strip Mine for sure. But I only have so many though, so they don't go in all my decks because I've only got like 4 Strip Mines.
But Winding Canyons is a favorite of mine too.
I love Winding Canyons. There's like Commanders. What's the one that puts it back?
Command Tower.
Command Tower tough for color. What's the one that like puts it back into your hand from the command zone or whatever?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
this is 6 mana to activate this.
Yeah, it's a lot. Are you actually going to do that? Because my guess is that that mana cost, you just never find a spot where you like it.
Here's where I think it belongs. I think it belongs in green decks that have a hard time dealing with certain things. Sometimes they can only fight creatures, and sometimes there's an Elish Norn across the battlefield and you're just like, oh, I can't get past it.
I'll just kill it, yeah.
Or in obviously colorless decks, you know, they'll run this for sure because it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and there are things out there, there are decks out there that would really want some sort of answer. So I think that I will play this in some decks, and I think that it's pretty okay.
I think it looks cool, but and people are going to play it, and you're going to see it in play, and you will rarely see it activated.
I agree.
I think very rarely. 6 mana is just so much. You have to be like in pretty dire straits to ever pay 6 mana at sorcery speed to destroy a creature.
But, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Now to the multicolored cards. We got 4 color cards left.
All right. Next up, we have Dragonborn Champion. 2 red-green for a 5/3 Dragon Warrior. It's got trample. And whenever a source you control deals 5 or more damage to a player, draw a card.
Oh, I like anything that says draw a card, but I have to deal 5 damage from one source?
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people were confused about being able to easily deal 5 damage. Like, no, it's from one source.
Right.
You know?
So something has to hit 4 or 5 at a time.
Yes, or more.
Well, sure. Good. Yeah, that's great. A little more.
Why Josh is laughing is because, you know, you're like, oh, I could draw like 3 or 4 cards. Well, if you're doing 15 or 20 damage to someone,
you're winning the game.
Like, do you really need that?
Seems like you've already drawn the cards you need because you're now winning. Like, there just aren't a lot of turns in Commander where you just deal 15. That's right. You usually are dealing like little chunk, little chunk, little chunk. Everybody's dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's not... Commander doesn't tend to be that incremental as far as, like, you know, you deal 5 to each opponent, then 10 to each opponent, then 10 to each opponent, then 15 to each opponent, then, you know, it doesn't tend to work that way. So
now it does say source you control, you know, and it doesn't say combat damage. It's 5 or more damage. So, Sure. You know, it could be direct damage, you know, Sure. Something like that.
What deals 5 damage at a time, though? We're talking about like Heartless Hitsugu and stuff like that.
Yeah. Heartless. Yeah, that's one.
But you're already, if you get that out and you activate Heartless Hitsugu, like how many games have you been in where somebody activates a Heartless Hitsugu and you live? They never would play it until they're going to be able to kill everybody, maybe sometimes including themselves, with it by untapping it or doing some weird stuff, right? Like, nobody just plays it Okay. And goes like, hey, deal 20 to everybody. I draw a card. Go.
Okay. Like, so here's the thing. So let's just say that this is just, you have some ways to deal 5, but they're not going to line up together.
Right.
Just this dealing 5 alone. Like, does this just as a 5/3 that could draw you a card when it connects?
If it was a 5/7, but it's a 5/3, so they're going to block it.
I mean, I would
block it. It has trample, but it only deals 5. So if they block one of it, then...
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to block it like most times because of the card draw. It's just not worth it.
I would as well.
It makes sense in the Vorondas deck because it's making 5/4s.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you have a deck that just happens, like one of the things it's doing is making 5 power or more, and it's going to do that a lot, like consistently in a game, then maybe it's okay.
But yeah, I would want to draw at least 2 cards off of this ability. And
hard to set that up.
And then I'm having a hard time imagining setting it up. So it means that lowers the power level there.
All right. The next one is Fevered Suspicion. 6 black-red, 8 mana for a sorcery.
Ooh.
Each opponent exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card. You may cast any number of spells from among those non-land cards without paying their mana costs. And then it has rebound, which means when you cast a spell from your hand, you exile it as it resolves. And then at the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost. So you pay 8 mana for this. You're going to get a spell off each player's library, right? Each opponent, sorry, yes. Not yourself. So you're going to, but it can't be a land because they have to keep going until they hit a non-land.
Yes.
And then on your upkeep, you're going to get another spell from each opponent. So you
6 for 1, Josh.
You get 6 spells for sure off this thing, for sure,
whether you want to cast them or not, marks, you know,
yeah.
Hit a counter spell, hit a board wipe when you don't want it, you know, things like that.
Yeah, just hit a ramp spell or a, you know, because you're spending 8 mana on this thing. So the question you have to be asking yourself is like, would I rather cast Expropriate? You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
of course you'd rather cast
Expropriate. I'm just saying you're at the level of like, right. Amenatu's Augury or something even. Like you're at the level.
Yeah, you're
blue
right.
Card, sorry. But you're at the level of like, I'm spending a lot of mana on a sorcery. It should have a big effect on the game. And this is like, well, maybe.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, even though you get to do it twice. Also, by the way, it's a scary card. There's a good chance you do this because you're late in the game. You have 8 mana when you cast this. And it doesn't go super well, or you get 1 good thing out of 3. And then the other player's like, he's going to cast that for free at the beginning of his turn. Let's kill him.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't like this card.
I don't like it either, especially when we have something like a Tali out there. 6 mana.
Tali's just way better, yeah.
It's your own. Yeah. So anyways. All right.
I like how you said Vile Smasher loves this because it rebounds for another 8 damage later. So you get 8 when you play it, and then you get 8 more later. So 16 damage.
There we go. Yeah.
I'm still not putting it in my Vile Smasher deck, though.
I do like this Rakdos card. It's Hurl Through Hell. 2 black-red for an instant, exile target creature. Until the end of your next turn, you may cast that card, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that spell.
So you... kill their thing, exile it, and then you can kind of steal it.
Yeah. When I play Hostage Taker, you know, good. And then the card is good. I oftentimes don't like just slam it for four. I want to be able to play it and then cast what I stole right afterwards.
Oh yeah, that's why it's so awesome.
Yeah, yeah, because you get the 2-for-1. And so this lets you do that 2-for-1, but it's also instant speed, exile, so mm-hmm. that if you do decide not to cast it or you can't cast it.
Hostage Taker exiles, does it? Yeah.
Yeah, but it comes back, you know what I mean?
Like right, if they kill Hostage Taker,
yeah. And then you can have the choice of casting it or not. So I actually think that Hrothrail is quite good.
Okay, well, let me tell you why I think it's way worse than Hostage Taker, though.
Well, yeah, okay.
It doesn't hit artifacts, too.
It's true.
And I'd say 75% of the time, Hostage Taker's taking a Soul Ring or something, which you can't do with this.
You cannot.
And then until the end of your next turn, you may cast that thing. So you're on a clock. It's not like whenever you feel like it after this, it's like, no, exile that thing. And then on your next turn, if you want it, you have to do it.
You're right.
Yeah. And 4 mana for a removal spell is not that great in that case. I mean, you can't blink this thing. Maybe you could, like, I guess if you had Snapcaster Mage or Torrential Gearhulk, it probably gets a lot better.
But I like that it's instant speed.
Yeah.
I like that it's exile, even if you choose not to.
Right, you can just leave it in exile.
You can just leave it in exile because...
But if you're going to do that, then you're just like, why didn't I play Utterend? Or, well, I guess you're in red-black, so maybe...
Yeah, but are you playing Terminate? Are you playing, like, Bedevil?
Yeah, but it hits artifacts.
Bedevil does hit artifacts. Yeah, Terminate doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Dreadbore, that's only 2 mana.
Sorcery Speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that The one extra mana is a lot, especially when you want interaction, because a lot of times you want your instant speed interaction to be as cheap as possible.
So you can still do stuff on your turn. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But I like the idea. I like the outside chance of being able to get a 2-for-1 from it.
Sure. I don't think you're going to play it.
Josh is calling me out. And he's probably right.
I don't think you're going to. Yeah.
I'm going
to
play it.
I know you, DJ, and 4 mana is too much for that.
Trying to defend the card, I like it. Calling me out, and he's right.
All right. Last card we're going to talk about is a card that it feels like a card I would play, but I probably won't. So it's Ride the Avalanche. It's a green and a blue, so 2 mana for an instant. The next spell you cast this turn can be cast as though it had flash. When you cast your next spell this turn, put a 1-1 counter... X 1-1 counters on up to one target creature, where X is the mana value of that spell. So you cast Ride the Avalanche, and then you flash out like a 6-mana something, and you get to put 6 1-1 counters onto a creature. But it's probably
not... already on the battlefield.
Yeah, because it can't be... Like, let's say you cast a 6-drop creature with flash speed from Ride the Avalanche. It's a cast trigger on Ride the Avalanche, so you can't put the 6 counters onto the creature you're casting that's triggering this thing.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big downside because, you know, you don't always have another creature out. That's just the way Magic goes sometimes. There's another card that this is similar to that I actually think the other card we're about to compare to is better, and I still don't play this other card, so I'm probably not playing Ride the Avalanche. It's Savage Summoning. It's a green mana for an instant. Savage Summoning can't be countered. The next creature card you cast this turn can be cast as though it had flash. That spell can't be countered, and that creature enters the battlefield with an additional 1-1 counter on it. This is a card I've toyed around with before, Savage Summoning.
Yeah.
I've definitely put it in decks and found that, like, there just weren't enough spots where it warranted... It's not like Quicken, which replaces itself. So Quicken lets you cast a sorcery at flash speed, but it also says draw a card. And so Quicken is playable and quite good, and I will use it in decks that have enough sorceries, because worst case scenario, you just go Quicken, draw a card. What sorcery are you going to cast? Nothing. I don't have one. Go. But it didn't hurt you very much.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt you at all.
Yeah. Whereas Savage Summoning doesn't draw you the card. Ride the Avalanche doesn't draw you the card. It's just not worth a whole card to cast one thing at flash speed, even if it gets a little bigger.
Yeah. So,
I mean, this could be the one thing I'll say about Ride the Avalanche is it can be a combat trick.
That's true.
Right?
You're right. You do need another card to follow it up to make it a combat trick, though.
Yeah. You could do it on your turn, just like, you know, attack, they block. This just doesn't come up in Commander very often. But because it doesn't come up very often, how many times are we in a game where, like, you attack with a 2-2 into their 1-3, and they're like, yeah, block, because nobody plays combat tricks in Commander. And you can be like, boom.
Boom, I killed your 1-3. Owned, Josh. It only took me 2 cards.
If it's my Thrasios, like, that sucks, you know?
You're right. a very specific situation.
No, Thrasios is very good. It goes in all the decks. So
you're blocking the.
Okay, that doesn't
is
make
that worth
it,
a card.
No, though? It doesn't make it much better.
Okay, so here's the thing. The internet likes this card.
The internet likes this card?
Yeah, the internet likes this card. Craig even kind of likes this card. He likes the idea of...
Craig doesn't like this card. He's not going to play this card.
We were talking about...
Because of Infect?
Yes, because of Infect. Because of Surprise. He likes being able to put a
he
bunch of
He does play combat tricks in his like pure Infect decks, which he doesn't have very many of pure Infect decks.
Yeah. People are talking about pretty crazy stuff like, you know... Being able to play this and then play like a Temporal Trespass, which is an 11 mana sorcery that says take an extra turn after this one.
But what? You have Temporal Trespass in your hand already. You're just going to pay a 3 mana extra turn spell. You don't need... What does Ride the Avalanche do here?
Give something +11/+11 and does it at instant speed.
Sure. Or I guess Treasure Cruise, Dig Through Time, like if the cost reduction is big enough, maybe.
I don't.
But if you're in a Temporal Trespass deck, you ain't like attacking people for winning, right? Like
are absolutely right. I do not like this card.
Yeah, because why do you care about counters if you've got extra turn spells? I don't.
You're arguing with Reddit right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's. Well, I promised myself I'll stop arguing with Reddit.
So. But people, here's the thing. People like this card. They like the combat trick ability because it's a combat trick and a sneaky way to cast spells. So it's two sneaky things in one. So put this card in your deck and kill Josh with it.
Sure. You're going to do what I did with Savage Summoning, which is try it a few times and realize, like, it's just not worth the slot.
Can I make a point, too, is that Savage Summoning, one reason why it felt clunky is because you can never play on curve. Right. You always have to need that one extra green to be able to play stuff, and so it feels behind. And this is off by two, which is way more than you think when it's talking about being on curve and off curve. So
honestly, I think it would be better if it said... Any spells you cast for the rest of the turn had flash. It wouldn't have to even give the +1 counters because that's something where you can have a crazy explosive turn on an end step on like turn 10 where you can be like, yes, it's 2 mana off, but what I'm doing is I'm flashing in 3 things and then untapping and doing something else. But the fact that it only lets you cast one thing kind of makes it so that part of it isn't even as good. So,
I like that too.
Yeah.
Okay, Josh. What do you think is the most powerful of the cards we talked about today?
Oh boy. That is okay. Hold on. I got to look through this. I know what you think because you wrote it down on the thing, and I might think the same thing as you. I'm just looking through everything real quick to see if I. Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what mine is, but I'll let you go first because I sort of agree with you, but I'm going to say something different just, you know, for the audience.
I like Druid of Purification. Honestly, I think that it's fun because it's political. It gets everyone talking. I like that aspect of it, but also. It just can be a staple where you kill what you want to kill and everything else is gravy. So I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of Druid of Purifications hitting the battlefield as we play. I think Ebony Fly. I think this card's just going to see a lot of play because the downside is so low.
I agree.
Like the cost of putting this into your deck is very, very low. And it is a thing where I think you will be able to sort of... There's often a point in the game where you're like, if I could just sneak this creature and it would be important to me.
Yep.
And the fact that the downside on it is so low, and also just like, hey, you got an equipment, like I said, or...
I want to get the Monarch. I want to kill a Planeswalker.
Yes.
I want to be able to get my commander in for commander damage.
Yep.
Like, I need to get a combat damage trigger. All this stuff.
There's a lot of points in games where people play a board wipe and do something, and they're kind of counting on the fact that I just played the board wipe, so nothing's going to be able to get at me. This is why haste is so good. So this is... Yeah, I like this card a lot. I think I'm going to put it in a bunch of decks. Honorable mention, you pulled this out. I like it a lot. Is Grim Hireling. This is the one where whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create 2 treasure tokens. I do think that's going to create a lot of treasure. We're going to see that one on the battlefield as well. Yeah,
I like that a lot.
Okay, so what card are you personally the most excited about, though, all this stuff?
I am personally excited about my coveted peacock upgrade, Vengeful Ancestor, the one that goads and messes with their creatures and deals damage for how they goad. I think this is a really fun card. I want to play it, make your creature attack into there, have things be political, mess with your boards, and do all sorts of cool stuff like that. I'm excited about it. I love the goad mechanic. It's fun.
I think I'm most excited about Fiend Lash, which is that equipment that says whenever equipped creature is dealt damage, it deals damage equal to its power to target player or planeswalker.
That's great.
I think some shenanigans could occur. I like what you were saying, too, about how you can sort of turn this into a lot of damage from a little damage. So even if you just have a Goblin Bombardment or some stuff like that in your deck, you could play this maybe as like, hey, I'm going to attack most of the time with my thing, and this is going to make it really hard to block it. But then sometimes I'm going to do gross stuff where I'm just like, sacrifice my creature to ping my own creature for 1 to deal 7 to you.
That's
do that
awesome.
Again, do that again, you're dead. Yeah. So,
oh man, I wonder if this belongs in like my goblin deck or something like that. Because that, you know what I mean? Like that happens all the time where it's just like ping instead of one damage, seven or.
Yeah, exactly. It's so much different if all of a sudden I'm sacrificing a creature to
just
deal.
A 2/2 is like on this. And it makes it a 4 power. So just bam, bam.
And because you can do goblin bombardment on other people's turns, you can even like, even if it's like a 3/3, you can do it twice. It's got 2 damage marked on it. Go to your turn, do it twice, go to your next turn. So yeah, I think Fiend Lash is pretty cool.
I think it's cool too.
All right, to the listeners. Who cares what we think? What card that we talked about today do you think is either the most powerful or your favorite? Which decks of yours are you putting them into? We'd like to hear any cool combos or whatever you have with any of the cards that we talked about. Or maybe there's some cards, you know, we didn't talk about every new card design for this set. So maybe there's something we didn't mention that you want to talk about. Please, in the comments is the place to do it. We do love going through that stuff. And we know our audience likes going through it too, just because, you know, we're just a couple of Magic brains here. As the internet has taught us, we're not going to think of everything. So the group think really does help all the time. In the comments, I'm like, boy, we should have thought of that. That's really cool.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. Yeah. Or if you are a patron and you're in the Discord, that's a place where people are firing ideas back and forth in big conversations about that. So for sure.
Yeah. So join our Patreon. .com/commandzone. I like that plug. Thank you, DJ. Another plug is you're going to want to get your hands on these Forgotten Realms commander decks. There's 4 of them. There's not just these cards. There's all the legendary creatures from the set. There's also the main AFR set. There's also a set coming out like every 5 minutes these days. So if you're like me, you're pretty far behind. If you're going to order Magic cards, singles, product, anything at all, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's the best place to go to get those cards. Card Kingdom is going to get you your stuff the fastest and in the best condition. And then once you have those cards, make sure you protect them. You don't want them to lose any value. Ultra Pro, they really do make the best products to protect your game pieces. Every single card we have up here, you can see, is in Pro Gloss Eclipse sleeves. Because as soon as we take these cards, we're not barbarians. As soon as we take these cards out of the boxes, we put them directly into the Ultra Pro sleeves.
We need them looking good on camera.
That's right.
You know, and so we want them protected.
Yeah, exactly. That's the ones we trust to protect our own collections with. Ultra Pro really does make the best stuff to protect your stuff. So by supporting our sponsors, you are supporting all of our content. All right. We've had so many episodes. I think we're averaging 3 videos a week. So right now we are still on a hiatus from the end steps. We'll come back soon though. Once we settle down, hopefully someday we get back to like one podcast episode a week.
Maybe we'll see.
Yeah. But big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone: Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred Staka, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, and Gaurav Galati. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that start our show and also often sit behind us, although Sam Waldo was responsible for this cool, I think that's the Underdark back there.
Yeah. There's some floating things over there.
Yeah, there's some spiders that run by. I think a beholder. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching, and we will see you soon.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.